You must finish what you started.
Why?
Because you're right. Here, look. Your ancestors called it magic, and you call it science. Well, I come from a place where they're one and the same thing. My father explained it to me like this, that your world is one of the nine realms of the cosmos, linked to each other by the branches of Yggdrasil, the world's tree. Now you see it every day without realizing. The images glimpse through, what did you call it? This Hubble telescope. Hubble telescope. So the nine realms. Now there is Midgard, which is Earth. Alfheim, Vanaheim, Jotunheim, and Asgard. And that's where I come from.
You are done fighting with your computer and technology, which is kind of, you know, reminiscent of our last episode when we talked about Iron Man and Tony Stark fighting with himself. But today, we get to talk about everybody's now favorite comic book character because of how he was portrayed by Chris Hemsworth and how the films were directed and the direction that they went. Today we get to talk about Thor.
Yes.
The tagline for this movie, two worlds, one hero.
Oh boy, back this when movie, we were corny.
Yes. This movie, we're still corny. Yeah. This movie is the beginning of, I think this kind of sets off the MCU in a different direction. We've seen The Incredible Hulk. We've seen Iron Man and Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
This one is taken in a completely different direction with a completely different director, Kenneth Branagh, who is an Irish director known for acting in Shakespearean adaptations like Henry V, Hamlet. He was in a Harry Potter movie.
Mm-hmm.
In a very comedic role. He directed a Frankenstein movie, the new Cinderella, the live-action Cinderella, and a Jack Ryan movie. So he's all over the map.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not
everywhere.
Yeah. And Jon Favreau is not, you know, necessarily a specific. He did Elf. He did Iron Man. He's done some other movies that don't. And he, you know, as an actor, he played in several different kind of genres.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, we're going completely away from the method, but Kenneth Branagh took this in a very poetic and beautifully filmed direction, focusing a lot on Asgard and a very simple town in New Mexico that had, you know, one street. So everything was just kind of laid out very simplistic, but also beautiful in nature. And we got introduced to some characters that we see later on in the MCU, but I, as you can tell, I'm very excited and I'm very happy. So I really enjoyed this movie. What about you?
I thought it was okay for me. Like,
oh, here we go.
Well, so I'm a very big like Norse mythology fan.
Okay.
And so there were some things that they took liberties with that made me kind of turn my head a little bit. But Thor, like the Thor character in and of itself has always been, even in the comics, not a direct interpretation of Norse myth. It's the happy version of Norse myth, in a sense, where actual Norse myth is pretty dark and gloomy. But the whole like plot of this movie was like after, you know, Odin got the frost giants like of Jotunheim to like make peace with them,
mm-hmm.
you know Thor, you know, gets all mad and angry, you know, at the frost giants after they come in, like during the ceremony. I'm trying to remember that ceremony where they're trying to steal something. The frost giants are, you could tell I wasn't as steadfast in this movie. The Casket of Ancient Winters. Right. Cause that's like the,
right.
Cause that's like the source of their power that they're going for.
Which is in the hall with all the other relics, and there's a mm-hmm. like a false infinity gauntlet that was for the left hand that Kate Blanchett pulls.
Yeah.
Pushes over later, which is not the real one. But yeah, there's...
Well, there's a theory about that it might be real and it might play into Endgame, where they're going to go get that to try to put the stones in it. But who knows? We'll know that in April.
But Nebula would get that, yeah. right? Or would that? Or okay, like let's that. Not. Okay, yeah, 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 yeah. yeah.
But how this happened, like with Thor getting like stripped from his powers and everything by going on this rampage, that I liked because that's Thor from like Norse myth. Like Thor will go on an absolute rampage and kill everything if you just make him a little bit angry. Like he's not a nice person in Norse myth. And so with him like being exiled to Earth, that's where like essentially all the Norse myth goes out the window.
Well, if you look at all that historical mythology, it's all based in trials and tribulations and learning lessons from major events that happen, and usually it's from a big fall, and so that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what you like about like the actual Norse mythology, and that's what you're saying they did that right.
Yeah. So like that I liked about it. Because it lets me follow the story really cohesively, because I can go, oh, okay, he thought he was ready to be king, you know, because he's so strong. He's like, I'm mighty, like I'm freaking Thor. I have this hammer, and. He gets absolutely shellacked and cast down by Odin.
In that the beginning. Scene, Kyle, that scene, you may know this from later on. We talk about fun facts and trilogy. Mm-hmm. That scene, Kenneth Branagh allowed Anthony Hopkins to go off script. So a lot of that was unscripted. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm going to play some of that audio here because that's probably one of my favorite parts. Even before I knew it was unscripted, I love Anthony Hopkins, so having him just kind of go off in this moment on Chris Hemsworth, and you know, you talked about meta in the last one where Don Cheadle is sitting there and, you know, is kind of addressing the audience saying like, hey, Terrence Howard isn't here, I'm here. I see this as well as this seasoned actor like calling out this, like, I mean, Chris Hemsworth had been in some things, but he's like, you know, you're talking about Kenneth Branagh and Anthony Hopkins in the same room. That's a powerful duo. So let's listen to this audio here.
Why did you bring us back?
Realize what you've done, what you've started?
I was protecting my home.
You cannot even protect your friends. How can you hope to protect the kingdom? Get into the healing room. No!
There won't be a kingdom to protect if you're afraid to act. The Jotuns must learn to fear me, just as they once feared you.
That's pride and vanity talking, not leadership. You've forgotten everything I taught you. But a warrior's patience.
While you wait and be patient, the Nine Realms laugh at us. The old ways are done. You'd stand giving speeches while Asgard falls.
You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy!
And you are an old man and a fool!
Yes. I was a fool. To think you were ready.
Father.
Hey! Thor, Odin's son, you have betrayed the express command of your king. Through your arrogance and stupidity, you have opened these peaceful realms and innocent lives to the horror and desolation of war! Unworthy of these realms, unworthy of your title, you're unworthy of the loved ones you have betrayed.
So that is super powerful stuff. And you talked about the dark nature of this, and you talked about like Norse mythology and how it's a little bit more dark. And it's, you know, we spoke about how lessons are learned. Loki is introduced and is, from what I can tell and from what I've been able to translate, he is the villain in this. I actually think the theme that from Iron Man 2, where he's kind of fighting himself, mm-hmm. I think this is here too. You got Thor who thinks he's ready to take over the throne. You know, and then Loki is the villain, but Loki plays the same character. I guess if I watched this for the first mm-hmm. time and I didn't know the other ones were coming out, I would say Loki is a villain.
Yep. And Loki is doing the same thing, like, ultimately, that Thor is. He's trying to get Odin's affection is all that Loki's doing. He's just doing it by different means, you know, because he's the one who gets Laufey to, like, come and try to attack Asgard. in there. But that's another problem I had. Lao Fei was a woman in the myth, not a dude like he is in this one.
So why would they change that?
Yeah, like that's what I guess they didn't want to see like them like beating on like Loki beating on a woman or something.
Oh, maybe. After like he ends they were up, all men though.
Yeah, after like ends up betraying Lao Fei because he really wanted Odin's affection. So like he had this elaborate scheme to try to like get rid of the frost giants for good so that he could become king so that Odin could see him as worthy. And so for me, like, Loki is kind of a villain, yes, but he's got the same goal. He's just doing it differently than Thor is. Like, he also wants to be king, which, right, is a noble cause, like, for Asgard, but he's not doing it the worthy way. He's doing it the, you know, sneaky way. And
well, he unfortunately finds out that he's not a part of their bloodline, mm-hmm. which I don't know why you wouldn't be able to tell that from pale skin and jet black hair.
Right.
But it's until he gets touched by a frost giant that he actually finds out that he is a frost giant. He's the blue baby.
Mm-hmm. And that's another liberty they took, like with Norse film, or I mean with Norse mythology, because Odin and Loki are blood brothers in Norse mythology. Like Loki is not like Odin's adopted son ever. Like they are essentially like on the same level when it comes to like equals in Norse myth. But in order to have this like power dynamic between brothers, there's no way you could have had Loki be just on the same power level as Odin and have Thor try to fight him. He'd have never stood a chance at that point. And that's almost kind of like how Norse myth is. Like Loki is such a trickster in real Norse myth that a lot of the gods don't even realize what he's doing until he's done something so outrageously bad that they like have to restrain him. And this version of Loki doesn't do that per se, but he does play a lot of tricks, which I liked.
Which is, like you just mentioned, is a part that is actually Norse mythology, mm-hmm. is he is the trickster god. That is how he's defined.
Mm-hmm. Yep, which to me was good. But yeah, they had to take a lot of film liberties with the myth to make sure it just doesn't go into a like giant killing fest of a film. Because if they wanted to be true in Norse myth, oh yeah, it just would have been an entire thing of Thor using Mjolnir to just kill a bunch of people. If they wanted to have it be like an autobiography of Thor's life.
Well, that's the part that I enjoyed the most about this is that learning lesson that we talked about of he took for granted the fact that that Mjolnir was made for him and it was his hammer. And then it gets thrown down and he can't pick it up unless he's worthy again. And he doesn't know what being worthy means. And it's almost like he's like back to infancy.
Yep.
And he meets Natalie Portman, Kat Denning, and Stellan Skarsgård. They were all awesome in this, playing scientists who actually discovered, you know, how the Einstein-Rosen bridge and the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah, the Bifrost.
The Bifrost was getting, like, they were seeing it in the sky, and then finally, like, he came down. And that's, they played a huge part in the introduction of humor into a new movie with a new character. So the humor in this one was played on every, like Kat Denning played a part of that. I think Natalie Portman was even funny in this. She's another female actor that I thought she was terrible as Amidala in the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And she was, I thought she was awesome in this and in the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought she did really well. Maybe she didn't want to be like the superhero actress or actor, is what I'm thinking, and didn't
maybe
yeah, and maybe that's why, like she didn't have any interest in continuing because we've never seen her, you know, past, you know, the second film. They've only just talked about her character, you know,
right?
You know, like weren't you dating her? Oh, it's complicated, you know, is what Thor will say now. But yeah, maybe she was just afraid that she was going to be like typecast, you know, if she kept doing these, you know, these Marvel movies, which couldn't be further from the truth because most of these actors' careers have jumpstarted as a result of doing these movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Chris Hemsworth, again, didn't have a lot of like massive notoriety prior to this. I think it was the hunky Australian, but he was one of two brothers who both actually went out for the role of Thor, including Tom Hiddleston. Also, there's images and video of him with a like a blonde wig on, actually auditioning for this role.
And the final two, when it came down to casting, was Chris and Liam Hemsworth.
I can would never imagine Liam in that role. He's not strong enough. I know this is just a 39-year-old Boise resident opinion, but I think that, like, Chris Hemsworth, as we all know, I mean, he's got, like, the build. He's super tall. He just represents. He got, like, not only shredded, but, like, massive for that role. And he's just, like, he, like, earned it.
Yeah, he seems like Thor. He doesn't. He looks like it, like the long blonde hair on Chris Hemsworth makes him look like Thor. Like long blonde hair on Liam. Liam's too.
It wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, he's like too lanky, too skinny. Like even when you see like Tom Hiddleston's footage of him, there's just no way he wasn't anywhere near big enough to pull on like this imposing Norse god that can lift this hammer. Right, and has these feats of strength where he can take on the Hulk. You know, you just wouldn't be able to see it, at least to me.
No. And, you know, speaking of his strength, this is the first time we see him topless. And Anthony Hopkins actually saw him, there was a quote that he said where he said, "God, there's no acting required here," where he sees this like beautiful young man in front of him and, you know, just kind of plays into that ego. But he's got beautiful blue eyes. He's what, like 6'5" probably. I don't know. I need to do my research on his height because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are clamoring for the truth, but I could not see anyone else in that role. I think that, obviously this was a huge role for him and it was a massive opportunity. But when we talk about all the other cast members that were brought on for this movie, the majority of them came on because of Kenneth Branagh and because of the movies that he's produced, the movies he's been a part of, and just kind of his name in Hollywood. So Marvel owes a lot. Well, no, I guess it goes two ways. Bringing him on allowed them to have a cast that was so incredible and so tenured that, you know, now, like when you watch that movie, it probably brought a lot of viewers into it, too. People who loved Anthony Hopkins but didn't necessarily like comic book movies. Yep. Rene Russo hadn't been in a movie or acted in 6 years and came on for this movie.
So, especially when you get that kind of power. But now, like, the roles have kind of reversed. Like, people see a Thor movie because they want to see Chris Hemsworth play Thor.
Right.
They couldn't care less about Anthony Hopkins being Odin at that point, because now everybody loves this universe so much that you no longer need the big star power. You just need a good Marvel story now.
Yep.
But all of these beginning stories needed to have that star power to be able to establish it, because Marvel was still going, okay, we don't have, like, it's not year 10 of this 10-year plan, you know, that we've got, you know, it's year 2, 3. And so they still need to get, like, bankable stars to be able to have people go, oh, this person's in this movie? Well, maybe I'll go see it. You know, kind of like I would see a Wolverine movie because Hugh Jackman was in it. Didn't matter if it was a bad Wolverine movie or not, you know?
Right. This movie itself was, like I mentioned earlier, it was very simple, and the lack of complexity, I think, also drew me in. There's some things in it that, you know, watching it again compared to how Hemsworth looks now, and this, we see this with all cinema. You start out with the first one where there's a character in it that is going to continue into a trilogy or quadrilogy, like whatever it is. You see them in the beginning really try to establish with makeup and or costume, like what they're going to look like and what they wanted to portray. So in the first one, in Thor, Chris Hemsworth is wearing the full Thor outfit from the comic books. They tried to get it as close to images that they have seen like on him, right? And then, and his face, his beard is dyed blonde so much so that it's distracting, and his eyebrows are also there, and I think when his hairline may be off as well. Whereas as you go into the second one, his hair is grown out, it's his colored beard, and the costume is a little bit less, I guess, like similar to, you know, the comic book, and it's kind of going a little bit on their own deviation and imaginative ways. And then you get Ragnarok, and they cut his hair, and it's like Chris Hemsworth's, like, as him.
Yeah.
You know, but portraying a role that they cast him in.
Yeah. They definitely tried to make the comic book aspect of this film, like, very comic booky in terms of, like, the character design, where they don't do that necessarily anymore. Like they don't need to have those bright colors, you know, for the outfits or the...
Oh, it's unnecessary. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, just look at Captain America to Winter Soldier, where Cap's Winter Soldier outfit is much more military than this, like, hey, America, blues, red, white, like, and it's just so impractical, where a lot of the things now that they wear are just, like, very practical suits of armor that just happen to also fit their characters in terms of look, and, like, that's how Thor is, to me, is also grown in terms of
in the first
costumes.
Captain America, he's...
Yeah,
in the first Captain America, he has, like, makeup on and his hair's done in a certain way to where now, you know, when you look at Infinity War, he, with his beard and his longer hair, and he had, like, his skin was a little bit darker, like, had more color into it, that, like, it is now Chris Evans as Captain America versus, here's Captain America, we got this guy Chris Evans to play it. You know, it's now so established with them that they can be them and look the way they look and look good doing it.
Yeah.
Cause I'd much rather see Thor in Ragnarok, or any of the ones post how he is now. I'd love to see his long hair obviously, but the seeing him now is just like, that's how, you know, he's easily identified. Idris Elba as Heimdall in this is also one that at the beginning he's in his full regalia, as well as Lady Sith and the Warriors Three. Is that the group name?
Yes, like, it should be that.
They're all in full uniform, and they are, like, they do what they're supposed to do, what their role is, you know, as Thor's like partners in crime, and, you know, like his group. And Heimdall is dressed in all gold, and he's at the Bifrost, and he has the Bifrost sword and allows people in and out. And then, you know, just in speaking of how they start versus how we know them now, Idris Elba was a household name. People knew who he was. But, you know, now I identify him so much with that character, as well as one of the people from The Office that fucks with Michael later on in the seasons. But he in Ragnarok then has dreads. You know, like, so again, we see these people, these characters start in this movie, while simplistic, very specific to, whether you want to admit it or not, to Norse mythology or Norse, like, artistry, and, like, blended with the canon we know from the comic books. And then they, like, blur the lines moving forward, and, you know, we start to see how the characters, or the actor and the director are actually going, like, hey, we're going to go this way, which is more natural because we already have a following and people already love what we're doing.
Yeah. They didn't have to make it, like, look like a comic book anymore. They could just make a good film where, like, early Marvel movies like these were so focused on getting the comic book aspect right because they wanted to make sure they didn't piss off, like, Marvel comic book readers. But even now, like, all of us, like, even me as, like, the Marvel comic book reader, I appreciate the current films a lot more in terms of just their design than these, because I want to watch a movie. Like, I can read a comic book, like whenever I want, but if I want to watch a movie, I want it to be a movie, not trying to translate, like, a comic into a movie, you know? That's why I don't think Watchmen did very well. At least to me,
I gotta rewatch that.
Yeah, to me, it tries to be so much like a comic book that it doesn't do good as a movie.
The end of this movie is one of the most expensive scenes in the movie, and it's with one of my favorite like special effects, and or I guess I don't know if it's a character or just like an event that happens, but mm-hmm. the Destroyer mm-hmm. is sent by Loki. The Destroyer can emit like that giant laser of fire.
Yeah.
And it's when it's at the end in that town where basically Loki sends it to destroy his brother. Cause Odin is in the Odin sleep, correct?
Yep. Correct.
And Thor, that's when we see Thor actually, be selfless, which is how he earns
his word,
the hammer,
yeah, and the worthiness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we get to see that first, the lightning bolt that brings the God of Thunder or the seductive Lord of Thunder to his, like his stance. And he like beats the shit out of the Destroyer and sends it back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Loki, like we kind of finally figure out what his grand plan was all along. And then Odin is like, nah, brah. Like what you did was not cool. You know, you may have thought you were impressing me, but you were not impressing me at all.
Yeah, he just keeps fucking up. Yep. So even all of his plans just keep getting thwarted. So it's almost like his plan is just piss people off,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, if he's the trickster god, that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. And he pissed a lot of people off in there and didn't get to become king, you know. But then Thor has the big moment of growth in a sense at the end, because even he tells Odin, he's like, nah, like I'm not ready to be king. You know, and that's right. And that's why he's worthy. Again,
the greatest lesson learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that he is not ready to like take up this mantle, even like because he thought just his arrogance would have gotten him through. But yeah, definitely, he like becomes more of the god that he's supposed to be after this, because now he knows mm-hmm. what he's supposed to do, who he's supposed to protect. Like he becomes Earth's protector. After this, like he says it even in the Avengers, like the Earth is under my protection, like as well. So he's not just out for himself anymore like he was before when he just tries to kill a bunch of giants, you know?
Yeah, and his main theme is to keep Loki away from the humans. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that is a big thing in this, I mean, we saw Tony Stark and Pepper Potts get closer and closer, and there's a love story there. Mm-hmm. But there's another love story in this one with him and Jane. You know, when they go back and forth about him explaining Asgard and, you know, the nine realms,
mm-hmm.
And like, you know, they're sitting in the campfire and they're going through it, and he falls in love with this mortal and she falls in love with him. But it's conflicting. It's not like, it's just like a slam dunk. She thinks he's definitely, hottie bo body, but like it's not until the end that he discovers that and that it becomes the theme for the next one as well, that he has to go protect Jane
mm-hmm.
From the ether.
Yes. Yeah, which, yeah, to me, we will talk about it when we see the movie, or not see the movie, but,
sure.
But when we have the next episode about that, that was not my favorite Marvel film.
And yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah. Because I've been talking to people about it, and a lot of people said they went back and watched it. Someone at work said that they watched it and they actually really liked it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to go back and do it. One major character that was intro in this that we missed, and I say major because they will be in Endgame, mm-hmm. is Hawkeye is introduced in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He's an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. or mm-hmm. he's a protector of the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's protecting the Mjolnir, the protective tent. And we get to see Hawkeye, but like not a lot is spoken about Jeremy Renner's character. Mm-hmm. And we just know it's Jeremy Renner, but we don't know like if we're supposed to like him. If you read the comic books and, you know, you had an affinity for his character, maybe you do, but for me, it was very lackluster, like as a intro.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And he plays a bigger part in Avengers.
Mm-hmm, yep, and he hasn't had his own movie, so he doesn't get as much character development as mm-hmm. like everybody else. But like we don't know yet. But yeah, Hawkeye's going to be a very big character. Over the course of like this MCU that they have had, and even without his own movie, I still think he's more like one of my more well liked characters, because he's got really good quips and humor and everything, especially in like his Avengers roles. he actually has pretty good banter with everybody back and forth, and I think that's why people have liked him and his portrayal of the character, at least me. I've actually liked what he's done.
I like him for his relationship with Black Widow, that it's not a romantic relationship, and the fact that he has a family. Like, I like that aspect of it that we get introduced to later.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do like Hawkeye. It's just in this one, it was, like I said, lackluster and just kind of left me not really wanting more, so not sure about that. We, throughout this conversation that you and I have been having through microphones but over FaceTime audio, we have talked about some trivia and some fun facts. But I wanted to, there was a couple that were quick ones that I wanted to share with you. As I talked about the simplicity in the town, there is a lot of little small pieces like built into it that are either homages or little like fun little pieces that they threw in there. So there's a sign in the town that states "Welcome Home Vikings," which is a local like the sports team, which I thought was funny. And then the town is called Puente Antiguo, which means antique bridge, which is similar to the Bifrost. So like talking about two connective portals, which I thought was cool. And this one, I saw this fun fact after the movie, and I'm going to have to go back and prove it to myself, do my own research. The crater that Mjolnir creates is actually in the shape of Cap's shield with concentric circles running on the outside going in. So
yeah, I'm going to have to look at that too. I read that.
Yeah. So you have to go back, do your own research, find out. Do you have any fun facts or trivia?
The Norse stuff. There's another one. Odin supposedly lost his eye, like in the battle with the Jotuns. But in Norse myth, that's not how it happened. He actually gives up his eye to obtain cosmic wisdom, to be able to, like, see everything and know everything. He had to sacrifice something, so he sacrificed one of his eyes to Mimir, who Mimir has this, like, little pool of wisdom that you can draw from, but in order to draw from it, you have to give something very valuable up. So Odin gives up one of his eyes to be able to become wiser as a god. So that's why, like, in Norse myth, you see, you know, him with the old eye patch. But that was another one of the, yeah, so that was like another one of the liberties that they took, because if you were gonna make it to Norse myth, you'd have to introduce Mimir, like, oh, and who's Mimir? Like, there's no way that we're gonna wanna, like,
oh, and just go into, like, yeah, a mm-hmm. 3-hour movie.
Yeah, exactly. So there was no way they were gonna wanna have to do that sort of story. So it makes it easy just saying, yeah, he lost his eye in battle. Makes it super, super cheap, too, in terms of set design.
Absolutely. When they're eating breakfast in the diner, and he slams the cup down on the ground, and he says another, I like how, like, infantile his response is, too, where he's just like, what, I enjoyed it, I want another. Like, he just doesn't understand humans at all, and the process of which we go through as a society. But a truck drives by. This is the same truck that goes to the crater site and gets the bed ripped off of it when it tries to pull it out. And that is our Stan Lee cameo. He's in the truck with the bed that gets ripped off, trying to pull this hammer out of the ground. So this is going far from the normal mistaken identity in the prior films. And is going into, like I said, he's a part of the set. He's a part of, you know, what's happening in the environment.
Yeah. And, like, that's pretty much every cameo afterwards. Yeah. Is he's like some sort of character that's in there. I mean, God, I still think my favorite cameo is when he calls Tony Stark Tony Stank. And he's the mail delivery man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are you Tony Stank? Yes, this is Tony Stank. I'm waiting to see what they're going to do with Stan Lee for Endgame, because apparently he had so many more cameos that were recorded already that they can just drop into different movies. I want to see what
they're just going to Carrie Fisher him in.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah.
Tupac him in.
Oh.
The post-credit scene was directed by... Well, you go ahead.
Joss Whedon.
You own this one.
Yeah. Joss Whedon. To connect it to the Avengers.
Intros into the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Got him. Jinx.
Got him.
The Avengers movie is definitely plays in the dark area, but like this intro allows us to see where they're going. And we've heard inklings of it by Nick Fury at this point. And we even hear Tony Stark in The Incredible Hulk kind of talking about, you know, when he comes into the bar with the general, he's talking about just the future and what that would look like. But this is the first time we actually see it go into something where there's a partnership and we're bringing all these people together. So that is where we are going to move to the next time we talk. As we continue to count down to Endgame, we are going to talk about the Avengers.
Yep, which, cannot wait.
Cannot wait. It's going to be so good.
Oh, yeah.
Any final thoughts on this movie, though?
To me, I hate to say that I think it's one of the weaker films.
I would hate that you said that, too.
Yep. And also, it's one of the weaker films in terms of box office gross, actually.
Okay, you're going to bring me, some facts on why it wasn't the best.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right. Because it only brought in $449 million.
Which
is actually pretty low for a Marvel film, because like even Iron Man 2 brought in over $600 million, and that movie wasn't considered great when it first came out. And so Thor, I think is, I'd have to see if it's the lowest grossing Marvel movie.
I think you and I may disagree on this Thor trilogy moving forward. I think we'll find a lot of similarities, but I can already tell where your head's at for the second one. And I'm gonna go into it as enthusiastic as I did today, because I am all in on Chris Hemsworth and I'm all in on Thor.
Okay, and I am not.
Got it. Okay. Kyle, I thank you for talking to me once again about what one can only conclude at this point is one of my favorite in the MCU up to this point. Even though by the time I was watching Marvel films, this one had already been made and I hadn't seen it. So I had to really go back and watch a lot of these films. But as we move on in this timeline and move forward to Endgame, it just gets better from here.
Yes, it does.
Maybe not according to you.
Well, you agree
on that one. Okay.
Well, besides the Thor 2, but you know, we will get there. I will get my grievances out when that happens.
So, I can't wait. For now, I will say goodbye, and Kyle, you will say...
good evening.
Good evening. And I'll say good luck. It'll be my turn. This is my time.
There we go. It is.
Okay. Peace.